Mother Nature, Mother Nature, she's gonna get you. Yeah, she's gonna get you. Mother Nature, she's gonna hate you. And she's gonna get you. Gonna get you, you betcha.
Welcome to Nature Bats Last in the Progressive Radio Network. It's NBL on PRN.FM. This May 3rd, 2016 edition, episode 88 of Nature Bats Last comes to you live from the Mud Hut in southern New Mexico, from northern California, and from Canada. Our thanks to AfroZen for his theme song contribution, and you can find more of his work on SoundCloud.com. This is a call-in show, so please prepare those questions and get ready to give us a call toll-free at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. This is also a call-out show, or as suggested by Mark, our videographer, it's a laugh-out show. Today we'll take issue with the celebrity culture and its influence, and we are joined by Canadian independent journalist Corey Morningstar. But let's start with an explanation of what we are trying to accomplish with this and upcoming episodes. We'll use this format about once a month, and we started about 5 months ago with an episode focused on Michael Mann and his work. We followed up with critiques of Catherine Hayhoe, Naomi Klein, Bill McKibben, and last month the nonprofit industrial complex. In every case, except for the latter, we've informed them in advance of our motives and asked them to join us on the show. And then, just to rub it in a little, we sent them a link to the show after it aired. Today, we'll continue our efforts to dig below the surface. But instead of focusing on a specific individual, we will concentrate on an entire sector, which is celebrity culture. We complain about mainstream media being bought by special interest groups like those who run the fossil fuel industry, but we rarely complain when our experts are tied to an institution, organization, business, or even a paycheck. The fact that someone is giving them a paycheck should be a red flag. Not everyone gets a paycheck. I don't. Guy doesn't. Corey doesn't. In fact, none of the major contributors to Nature Bats Live on the Progressive Radio Network receive a paycheck. We are not on the payroll at PRN, nor have ever been asked to edit or censor our content. There are no sponsors on PRN. We are not governed by the FCC, so we can say whatever the fuck we want when we want. Today, we continue our series of episodes focused on leading scientists and public figures who want to have and who have major voices. Today, we're going beyond individuals, but still focusing on the primary source of news for most people. These people and groups are vital to the flow of information heard by most people. We are not saying they have all been bought. We are saying they are censored, whether it be by an institution or an organization they work for, or self-censorship in response to potential action taken against them, like maybe not getting a role in a movie. We are not paid. With this episode and others in the future, we will likely encourage anyone who receives significant airtime in our media, major media outlets, to become free agents. This isn't to say that you can't have a job or make an income or make a movie. We are, however, saying that if you are a leading voice in environmental protection, social justice, or climate science, your voice and your word are suspect. In order to become a trusted member of Information Exchange, a sacrifice is required. Actually, it only feels like a sacrifice until you've taken the steps that we've taken. Leaving the institution or organization that pays you will set you free and give the public a reliable, much-needed voice. We here at Nature Bats Last are not well-known or leading voices in the mainstream media, yet we have taken steps to be considered reliable voices. Please join us in supporting those who also must take such a step. The echo chamber must become quiet. All right. So let's start. Corey, you there?
Hi, I'm here, Mike.
All right. I wanted to start with a man who has really become symbolic in the imaginary fight to combat climate change. In January, Leonardo DiCaprio began his awards tour by collecting the Golden Globe, and you and Forrest Palmer wrote a piece for A Wrong Kind of Green discussing King Leo. And I was wondering if you could talk about that piece you guys wrote.
Oh, not really. I've written so much since then, I barely recall. That was about an Academy Award.
Yeah, it was his first award, and so obviously followed. He won the Academy Award, and why don't I play the clip from the Academy Award, and we can go from there because it's a similar speech. And
sure.
We'll talk about that. So, if the studio can play the clip.
Before you do that, though, I want to ask Corey what her dog's name is, just so we know who is always on the show.
Midnight.
Oh, nice.
Thanks.
All right.
Making the Revenant was about man's relationship to the natural world, a world that we collectively felt in 2015 as the hottest year in recorded history. Our production needed to move to the southern tip of this planet just to be able to find snow. Climate change is real. It is happening right now. It is the most urgent threat facing our entire species. And we need to work collectively together and stop procrastinating. We need to support leaders around the world who do not speak for the big polluters or the big corporations, but who speak for all of humanity, for the indigenous people of the world, for the billions and billions of underprivileged people who will be most affected by this, for our children's children, and for those people out there whose voices have been drowned out by the politics of greed. I thank you all for this amazing award tonight. Let us not take this planet for granted. I do not take tonight for granted. Thank you so very much.
Okay. Well, that made me feel a lot better.
Does that mean we're safe? Can I go back outside into my garden?
Sure.
So basically, Forrest and I were just writing about, going back, I can't even remember what year ago, decades and decades ago when Marlon Brando, went up there, and I think he refused his Academy Award because
right.
of, indigenous things that were happening, oppression back then. And here we are decades later, and nothing's changed. In fact, the genocide of indigenous people is accelerating. And, we've got these, it just makes me almost sick listening to that. Thanks a lot, Mike. But there's one of the most gluttonous people that walk the face of the earth telling us we have to solve the climate crisis. Really? I really don't get how people can even listen to that without feeling like they're going to vomit under their desk or on the floor. Like, it's over-the-top hypocrisy. We're all sort of hypocrites living under the system. But him, like, he is such a gluttonous, he's the face of consumption and gluttony.
The fact that they had to move their entire movie set and the amount of energy that took to do to the southern tip of South America just to film so there was snow speaks to the absurdity in that he doesn't, I don't know if that hasn't dawned on him or it has dawned on him, and we're just, the people watching this are just like, well, they just take that for granted that, well, it's a movie, that's what you do. But, and that he mentioned greed as well, all in 1 minute.
it's outrageous, and then in that, I forget what article it is, I think it's the one about, it's not even out yet, Stable to Star. Guy, do you remember that article?
No, not
Parrish,
the title.
Parrish. Parrish. What's his first name? Billy Parrish.
Billy Parrish.
Yeah. So anyway, there's a quote in that article. It's from Leo, the face of indigenous rights and climate change and environmentalism. And basically he's saying how he talked to his friend Naomi Klein because, you know, that he knows her, and she told him that there's not a single thing that an individual can do. So basically right there you've got, you know, do whatever you want. It doesn't matter, right? And what's the solution then? Well, I guess market solutions.
Yeah.
Right. Maintaining business as usual by whatever means are required to do that. And I can understand why people fall for this, because we're celebrity culture. We don't want to take responsibility, so we want to look to some celebrity who is created to make money for people. We want to look to those celebrities, wishing we were them, and looking to them for the kinds of inaction we can use to justify our own inactions.
Yeah,
we are celebrity culture, pure and simple.
Yeah, and it's a I don't know if you guys, the movie itself is totally symbolic of the Good White Fairy. It's a movie about a white man seeking revenge for the death of his, you know, basically adopted indigenous son. You know, it's got that Dances with Wolves, Avatar kind of white man come and save the day. And then he gives his acceptance speech, which is just, you know, another version of the movie.
And, I mean, they say all this. I mean, indigenous rights, civil rights movement, they all play quite a big theme in the, I'm going to use a word I'm just looking at within a quote, envirotainment landscape that we have today. And, it's just crazy because at the same time, these same people, DiCaprio, Klein, McKibben, Patel, Greenpeace, Avaz, they're all, the main campaign to solve the climate crisis is quote-unquote clean energy. And as we pursue clean energy, we basically absolutely ensure the complete annihilation of indigenous people and displacement through these market solutions and through this quote-unquote clean energy. So while they're talking out one side of their mouth, you know, the other side ensures the exact opposite what you're saying.
Right. Absolutely. In the article that you sent us, The Art of Annihilation, you talk about different things that the general public is missing. Obviously, they're gullible, and they don't understand the magnitude of the crisis or the root of the crisis or the involvement of the industrial nonprofit industrial complex. And you have a clip in there that I'd like to play next that is from a few years ago, and it's with an actress, Michelle Rodriguez, and she was in the Fast and the Furious series. And I think this clip really speaks volumes of to what's going on. So if we could play that clip next.
One of the things that's so great about this woman is she just wants to soak it up like a sponge. And she's really here. She's just one of us. Oh, look at that kiss. Thank you so much for coming.
Michelle, thanks for having
you.
Me, guys.
It's an honor to have you here.
No, that's like thanking yourself, guys, because we're all in this together. So, you know, just really try your best. I've been watching, and the only observation I have so far in the last 4 years of following this community as much as I can to learn, I'm still learning, is that there's a lot of alienation going on, and there's a little bit of anger going on behind a lot of people who are in the green industry who've been scarred just by the process of trying to spread the message and trying to get out there. And I feel that pain. But let go of the alienation and embrace the new era of capitalism, and let's start thinking consciously capitalistic and all-encompassing, because I really think that's the only way to help the planet. You know, if you can't beat them, join them.
If you can't beat them, join them.
Now that is crazy shit.
It is. I know. You can't make this shit up.
I mean, Forrest and I found that. Forrest Palmer, Wrong Kind of Green, we found that virtual dumpster diving.
Oh, wow.
And
conscious capitalism? Really? Isn't that being unconscious?
Hey, she's just one of us, guy.
Yeah. Yes, she's just one of us. Buy, buy, buy. Consume, consume, consume.
Yeah, and she's actually the voice now for global goals for the United Nations.
Wow.
Yeah, like in the cartoons that they have that I actually saw now. I mean, this is how well-planned everything is. Just a couple weeks ago, and I haven't written about this or anything, but I was just doing some research and looking for some specific images, and I saw animals from the global goals that came out, I'm pretty sure, after the climate march of 2014, but those same puppets and animals that they use in that commercial, and they use that really, really to appeal to children, just like cereal boxes.
Right.
I saw those puppets, those animals in that climate march. So, I mean, this stuff's really, really strategic, right? Like, the way it's going to be rolled out, it's all developed, it's all designed. They already know the way they want everything to go. They already know what the quote-unquote solutions are, which is basically the expansion of capital markets.
Right.
And then we pretend that we're demanding this stuff, right? They're going to give this in response to our demand. So it's a big game of pretend.
And, you know, it's not.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's not as if they haven't rolled out things like this before. It's the same script every time, and we sort of go for it every time. Hook, line, and sinker. So, since Edward Bernays made it obvious how easy it is to manipulate people en masse, it has become the approach to manipulating people en masse, and the people who are being manipulated seemingly don't have a clue, or maybe they really don't want to know. I suspect that's the case many times because, you know, I don't want to know the consequences of my actions if they include dead children in the northern portion of Africa and the Middle East. I don't want to know about that. I don't know what keeps the lights on where I live and what keeps food coming to the grocery store. So I suspect a lot of people in this culture are so unwilling to know that they just don't. They don't know, so they're willfully ignorant.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys saw any of those quotes. Michael, the article you're talking about was actually part 13 of the Victims of Investment Tour series. I'm just trying to find the
and
title
you're
of that
part
one.
Now, right?
Yeah, sorry, the increasing vogue for capitalist-friendly climate discourse and just how that segment really, really tries to hit home how important, how integral the whole celebrity culture is to the discourse and to all the false solutions, you know, that we're being led to, like lambs to the slaughter.
Right. I think this divestment investigative series, for me, has taken me to a whole new place. I mean, I knew things were organized, and I knew things were sinister. But if you've not read Corey's divestment report series, I mean, it is volumes of what has been going on right in front of us, which we just, like guys pointed out, we just don't really want to know. And it is fascinating reading, and it's depressing as shit, but it's real, and it is well done. I mean, there's so much to go through, and it's well documented, and it's taken me to another place of, I guess, awareness, enlightenment of how fucked we really are, because it is organized beyond organization. It really is.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, it's the stuff by. Now, I hate to say this, I just know it like the back of my hand, you know, it's almost become boring. It's just so
right.
Clear to me now from from going into such depth. And we will never, ever slow down climate change at all, you know, as long as the nonprofit industrial complex is leading. And in the West, we're happy to have them lead. You know, we follow like little soldiers. And we are the, we're the foot soldiers for the oligarchs. It's sad. It's sad.
Yeah, it's, I mean, when you see, even for people that are totally oblivious, when you see a picture of Amy Goodman from Democracy Now! And Susan Sarandon, both were held high and fighting for the, you know, fighting the good fight with, you know, a Puma logo in the background. and that's just scratching the surface of what we're, what we've become and what we, for those we look up to. And those that, you know, Amy Goodman and Democracy Now!, a lot of people that are in our circles, you know, they eat that shit up. And but it, when it comes down to it, it never actually challenges the living arrangement at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I mean, I agree, Mike. And look at how many, quote-unquote, no, let's just call them celebrities, they are. Look at the Envirotainment celebrities, such as McKibben and Klein, since we've talked about them on the show. Look at all of them in the limelight, the ones that are put, you know, on the pedestal, front and center of media, and how many are anti-imperialist?
Yeah.
None.
None. Zero.
Yeah, and that tells it all. You know, I could just cut the whole series short, and we could just write something about that in a paragraph, and that basically tells everything.
Right, right, absolutely. And we have to wonder, you know, the question then becomes, why? And we, and I talk about it at the beginning of every episode we do with you, is because there's a consequence for being anti-imperialist. You don't get a voice on that level.
Do you suppose they know? Do you know that what we know, or they, are they these leading voices, are they in the same place that we were, you know, maybe 10 years ago, and we really didn't know, and we weren't questioning the dominant narrative. And so we thought we were doing good work, because civilization is the only way to live, obviously. It went without question. It was just assumed away. Yeah. So do you suppose they're there, or do they know what's going on in the world? Are they actually enlightened? And this is more malignant and purposeful than pure ignorance.
Yeah.
Is that for me or Mike?
You both.
Well, I mean, when I began writing about the divestment, after the first couple segments, I'm trying to think when I began writing about that, because I'm not sure if it was right before or right after Klein joined the 350 board. And so back then, I wasn't too sure, you know, for an investigative journalist, I thought, wow, you know, I can't believe this, because their roots are in with the Clintons and the Rockefellers, and her, of all people, you know, she's written about all this. She's criticized Bono for being in bed with the Clintons. Anyway, as I continued to write and observe and research, and at one point, you know, just sort of thinking, is she, you know, like you're saying, guy, is it malicious? Is it ignorance? What is it? Is it just denialism? So I just said, I'm just going to tweet her right now. I'm just going to ask. And I'd never sent her any messages before, ever. And she had followed me for a long time. And I don't even know if I followed her at that point. Anyway, it doesn't even matter. I asked four simple questions, and I've put them online before, and one was about disclosure on what 350 did in Bolivia. I asked her about disclosure on her partner, Abbas, and them, you know, essentially up to their neck in the blood of Libyan people for calling for that no-fly zone and being a tentacle of empire and making that whole invasion, getting the public to acquiesce to that. And basically, I asked four specific questions. I wasn't rude in any way, and she immediately blocked me.
Mm.
And so, you know, to me, that was my answer.
Yeah.
Because if that was me, I would have been horrified. And I would have wanted to know what I was involved with if I didn't know already.
Right. Yeah. I can't imagine they don't know on some level. I don't know if they're going through, you know, guys, giant climate summary on a daily basis. But if you're in this long enough, you whether with intent or not, you come across things that influence you and change you and where you can't erase. And I can't imagine being in this game this long and not having a sense of what's really happening.
Well, yeah, and I mean, that's not even touching upon the big, another huge massive lie, which is that whole two degrees, you know, that Guy has spoken about. I mean, that's deliberate.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I continue to speak about it on a regular basis.
The two degrees
is definitely deliberate. There's no question about that at this point.
So it's almost like you want to find something, you want to give them some sort of allowance, you want to, you know, you do sort of want to think, well, maybe they don't know, and, you know, maybe, you know, McKibben's belief in God supersedes his logic and makes him, you know, able to deny things, but ultimately they know.
Yeah.
You know, they do. And when I went through, I think I told you this a while ago, Guy, one night when I was doing research, I just looked through Klein's 500-page book on climate change and all the rhetoric by, again, as we've already mentioned, by DiCaprio and all the rest of them on indigenous rights. I mean, in that book, imperialism is mentioned one or two times in a 500-page book about climate change.
Yeah, I mean, that says it all right there.
Yeah, I mean, militarism, I think, has one small paragraph.
Right, yeah.
And this is from a woman who clearly is capable of going deep on some subjects and getting to the root of issues. You know, her early books questioned the basis of consumer culture.
Right.
And now she won't do that.
Right.
No, if you look back, the timing of that book, the funding of that book by Rockefellers and other foundations, the film, Ford Foundation, other tons and tons of foundation money pouring into that book and film project, which initially was called The Message. Everything that's happened since then, that was sort of the springboard. Like the People's Climate March in that book, it was all designed to pop at the same time. That was the springboard for what is coming out now, the new economy, which everyone's all excited about, even though no one has a clue what it means.
Right.
Just a new economy, right?
Yeah,
it's to obscure what is coming. You know, it's feel-good stuff. It's like when you see a commercial. The commercial rarely focuses on the product. It focuses on the bodies of the young people who are having fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I was thinking today, when I was in Montreal, there was this ice cream shop, and there was the oldest bagel shop in Montreal was close to it, and that's why I saw it, because I went to get these bagels. Anyway, there's tons and tons and tons of people lined up down the block, and what does that make everybody want to do? Check it out. Oh, it must be good ice cream. Let's go stand in line. And celebrity is the same type of thing. Oh, everyone loves Naomi Klein. Everyone loves 350. You know, everyone's going to the climate march. I mean, it really has become envirotainment. We don't gear up and put on our masks for tear gas and, you know, make sure we have shields to go out and shut things down and fight, you know, to protect our bodies. Like, we go get a Starbucks and go to the march.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
You're listening to the Progressive Radio Network. We're speaking with independent investigative journalist Corey Morningstar, and we're talking about celebrity culture and the new economy. I want to shift gears here a little bit. DiCaprio, about a decade ago, along with Al Gore, both had movies out about climate change, and Leo had The 11th Hour, and of course we had The Inconvenient Truth by Al Gore, and I want to play a clip by Gore where he begins posing a question: do we really have to change? And he then spends about 10 minutes pointing out the mess we're in, and then he kind of goes from there. So if we could play that Gore clip, that would be great.
Economic Forum last month in Davos, after their annual survey of 750 economists, said the climate crisis is now the number one risk to the global economy. So you get central bankers like Mark Carney, the head of the UK central bank, saying the vast majority of the carbon reserves are unburnable. Subprime carbon. I'm not going to remind you of what happened with subprime mortgages, but it's the same thing. If you look at all of the carbon fuels that were burned since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, this is the quantity burned in the last 16 years. Here are all the ones that are proven and left on the books, $28 trillion. The International Energy Agency says only this amount can be burned. So the rest, $22 trillion, unburnable, risk to the global economy. That's why the divestment movement makes practical sense and not just is a moral imperative. Now, so the answer to the first question, must we change, is yes, we have to change. Second question, can we change? This is the exciting news. The best projections in the world 16 years ago were that by 2010, the world would be able to install 30 gigawatts of wind capacity. We beat that mark by 14 and a half times over. We see an exponential curve for wind installations now. We see the cost coming down dramatically. Some countries, take Germany, an industrial powerhouse with a climate not that different from Vancouver's, by the way, one day last December got 81% of all of its energy from renewable sources, mainly solar and wind. A lot of countries are getting more than half on an average basis. More good news, energy storage from batteries particularly is now beginning to take off because the cost has been coming down very dramatically to solve the intermittency problem. With solar, the news is even more exciting. The best projections 14 years ago were that we would install 1 gigawatt per year by 2010. When 2010 came around, we beat that mark by 17 times over. Last year, we beat it by 58 times over. This year, we're on track to beat it 68 times over. We're going to win this. We are going to prevail. The exponential curve on solar is even steeper and more dramatic. When I came to this stage 10 years ago, this is where it was. We have seen a revolutionary breakthrough in the emergence of these exponential curves.
We're saved. Wow.
So much bullshit in there. For one thing, that 81% in one day in Germany. So many of our celebrity environmental leaders, they are citing that number, and it's completely wrong. It's not true. And Derek Jensen, who I think has been on the show before, is writing a book called Bright Green Lies, just how they frame that shit. And they use different words. It's deliberately misleading. And in actuality, that day they're talking about was something like 6%. I mean, it's so wrong. It's so much bullshit. Like the divestment. I mean, they don't tell you that they're looking for $90 trillion for the, you know, what is it, Guy? Third Industrial Revolution, that they're calling it?
Right, the Third Industrial Revolution.
Right.
It's like promoted by the voices of empire.
Right. So where's that money going to come from? Well, it's going to come from the treasury. It's going to come from the people. Right? This is just more looting the treasury, more money going into the hands of the rich. It's just... it's insane. I mean, we've known for decades and decades and decades that by the year 2030 we'll be absolutely out of resources, and yet now we're going to online the whole planet in solar panels and wind and all this other, you know, new Teslas for everyone, blah, blah, blah.
Everything is still made from fossil fuels.
And it's crazy. We will burn every last drop. Every last drop.
It reminds me of what Mark Z. Jacobson said. We can go all renewable by 2030. That was a few years ago, and then about a year ago he said, oh, I'm in 2050. So the goalpost keeps moving back for one thing. For another thing, it's all about the money. It's always all about the money. How many times did Gore mention the dollar signs in there with millions of dollars and billions of dollars and so on? It's all about the money. Yeah, yeah. It really is all about propping up this set of living arrangements for the longest possible time at the expense of the people who are always being fleeced, who are expendable. And finally, there's this great cartoon by Stephanie McMillan that I've been using lately in some of my presentations. And it shows an utterly destroyed planet, you know, a dead ocean and a factory zone in the background, and things are well, they look like they look now. They look like Oakland, for example, in the Bay Area of California. And there's some guy on a ladder putting solar panels on his roof, and the woman is standing there talking to him saying, "The important thing is that you feel good about yourself." And, you know, and that's what Al Gore is doing. He's making us feel good about ourselves.
We're winning.
Yeah, by capitulating to imperialism, by maintaining the settled living arrangements by any means possible, by every means possible.
Right, like you guys are the white saviors, even though, you know, the person, you know, I don't know, I keep saying this, everyone that can afford to get on a plane, that means everyone basically listening to the show, everyone, you know, typing on Facebook right now, right. We're the ones creating 50% of all the global emissions on the planet.
Yeah.
Right? But we need more. We want more. That's not enough. Now we need more. Now we're going to do it in solar and wind and Teslas and all the other shit. Like it's, there's... You know, it's perfect to have these celebrities pushing these illusions, because then we never have to, like you said, Guy, we never have to look in the mirror.
No, we have the perfect vehicle. We have, this was Gore's TED Talk from February, and TED is the perfect delivery mechanism because it's well packaged and it sounds smart, and you have people who are recognizable on, and it's interesting stories. So it's really a perfect vehicle for the whole entertainment environmental disaster.
And you know what else is strange too, Michael? When I was doing some research as well, I came across photographs of Al Gore with Leonardo DiCaprio when he was just a kid.
Oh, wow. Took him under his wing.
Yeah, it's like they're genetically making these genetically mutated people in a lab or something, right? Like, it's crazy stuff. I just want to say, like, while we're on the topic of this, just how much I hate celebrities. You know, the whole thing, I think it's such a fetish. I think it's an obsession with the American populace. I think it's disturbing, and I think it's dangerous. About 10 years ago, I was at my mom's house, and my sister, who's a teacher, buys all those magazines. You know, all the gossip magazines. They're a lot of money. And she buys them every week with her groceries. And then they get distributed, right? They get, oh, I'm all done. Then they go out to my mom's house, wherever. Anyway, I looked around and everybody had one of these magazines, and everyone was completely engrossed, right? Reading about all this irrelevant shit that means nothing to us. And at that time, that was it for me. I just thought, no more, never reading one of those pieces, you know, those rags again, ever, because it's mind pollution.
Yeah, it really is. I have a good friend who has what I would call a little slight addiction to People magazine, and every once in a while I go over to visit, and there's People magazine sitting there, so I'll thumb through it, and I don't actually recognize anybody anymore. If you're out of the game for a little bit, it's all these new faces.
You only know the old people, like Angelina, Brad.
Right. But we're going to be in People magazine, so then celebrity culture will be good, right?
Well, since we're not going to be on Rolling Stone, thanks to Corey, People magazine will be the next step. Right?
So we are going to make People, because we're going to make Rolling Stone. Right. I don't like the way it's turning out.
Why don't we move to somebody who Guy has rubbed shoulders with, and let's hear a little clip from Bill Nye, the science guy.
Scientists you talk to, I don't care what their particular concentration, if they know anything about science, they're not hopeful. No one says, you know what, it's going to be great. You know, I mean, people need to wake up and realize that every single scientific mind in the world basically says, hey, you know what? We might be in trouble.
Bill, are you hopeful? Because you're our last hope here.
I'm always optimistic. If you're not optimistic, you're not going to take action to get things done. But sure. I say it's going to be a close call, and this is not an extraordinary claim. It's going to be a tough nut to crack. Mm-hmm. So what we want to do is have a fee for carbon dioxide production. and then we will return the fee to the people.
Power to the people.
Because
so I didn't know Bill was a communist. Man,
well, this
had I known
trouble.
That before, I invited him on the show.
But here's the trouble.
I can hear Ted Cruz right now.
Okay. So Ted, here's the trouble. Where's the model for this? Collect using wealth from the public and redistributing it to the people.
Well, I don't know. Don't they call that socialism?
Yeah, and where is it in the United States? Alaska. Alaska.
Oh, yeah.
Has the Alaska.
They have a reverse income tax.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's not known.
The state makes money. My wife came from Alaska.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, so
she's
every family
gets.
It's like $1,000 per. I don't know what it is
this
now.
This year it's $1,800.
Yeah, in her day it was $1,000 per member of the family, which also meant you might want to have more babies. But it's per year. And this is the. It's called a, it's a tax. A negative tax rate for their oil profits
Alaska
that they make.
Production fund, mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
So we could do this, and this would provide economic incentives, which I think is the key to getting her done.
To keep it in the capitalist motivated.
Well, not just that. So people who make a lot of carbon dioxide, these would be rich people who live high on the hog, as David Attenberg described it, where the meat is strong and properly marbled. And then the middle class would get the money back. Oil companies, fossil fuel companies already have this built in. They're anticipating a $40 a ton surcharge that's in their economic modeling. It's cool. We could, if we did this, and then the countries that don't produce carbon as much carbon dioxide would have a tariff or a fee on the goods that were being imported that had a high carbon output. This is not everything's going to be fine. It is part of the solution.
So, Bill, for president's economic advisor, that's what you're...
Well, yeah. This is not an extraordinary claim, and it's not really my idea.
No, it makes sense. You're
but I
got to
say, it's from a libertarian point of view.
This is Star Talk.
Oh, that's your buddy guy.
Well,
it's your friend guy.
Yeah, it's your best friend.
The economist guy.
That was Neil deGrasse as well, so...
And small wonder we call this the dismal science. By the way, when Bill Nye visited the homestead on September 10th, 2015, he said that he was participating in his annual contest with Ed Begley Jr., who can have the smallest carbon footprint for the year.
Right.
And this was September 10th, and Bill Nye had just come from shooting portions of this episode that appeared on National Geographic. So he'd just come from Miami and Miami Beach and the tar sands in Edmonton and Sacramento and Stanford and then found his way to rural southern New Mexico. And he said he was winning by a wide margin. His carbon footprint was really low compared to Ed Begley Jr.'s.
Well, why don't we play the Ed Begley clip? That's the last clip we have, and then we can talk a little bit about that. Sorry, it's not cued. I kind of jumped around on PRN on there, so once he's getting it cued. But we have a clip from Ed, and he's going to talk about his new home and how he's moving from a smaller house to a bigger house that is, I believe, LEED Platinum. So once that clip is cued,
go ahead. That'll fix it.
Your web series on Bagley Street, and you are building a house from ground up. This is clearly your dream, right? Like this project, is this the dream project more than anything else you've ever done? Is this it? No?
This has been something kicking and screaming my wife dragged me to. I lived in this house for 26 years, a house that was on a show called Living with Ed.
Yep.
I've been there since 88. I loved it. I used to joke, but I wasn't entirely joking, that I would be composted out back.
Yeah.
You know? And then she kept saying from early on when we were dating in the 90s, she'd go, hey, you need more closet space. I don't have any room. Whoa, honey. Okay. I hear you. You got to find another guy. You got to start dating.
Yeah.
Because this is not going to work. I'm never going to move from this house ever. Read my lips. I'm never moving.
Yeah.
And so I said that and I meant it. 93, 94, 95. Finally, by 2010, she had worn me down. We had 3 very successful years with that show, Living with Ed, and mm-hmm. acting career was doing good, and green product endorsements, so we had the money to do it. She said, we've got the money now. Please, would you consider, if I could get you more solar rooftop space to get more exposure for your panels, if I could get you a bigger vegetable garden, I could get you more room for a rainwater tank underground, would you move then? I said, okay, if you can
find
B, C, D, E, F, G for this price, for F, then I'll move.
Yeah.
And the bitch did it. She found the place, and I had a, you know.
That's your quote, not mine.
I know.
Yeah.
It's going to be good when we're moved into this house and happy about it. I'll feel very good about it all because you can only do so much with a retrofit. I was starting with, in 88 when I bought that home, it was a 1936 energy inefficient house. There was no insulation in the walls whatsoever. I blew it in. Mm-hmm. No insulation in the attic. Put these big recycled denim, you know, bats up there. Did all this stuff, one thing after another. I made it as efficient as you could. Let me tell you what you can do with new construction. We can blow incredible insulation in the walls. It's modern foam insulation. The walls are 12 inches thick. It's passive solar design. So wintertime, the sun is hitting the glass. Summertime and a little before, a little after, no sun is hitting the glass. Incredible Lutron smart equipment for the lighting control, shades and lighting fixtures. Incredible high SEER rating heating and air units, variable flow, four different zones. It's amazing what you can do with modern construction, and we're doing it all. Yeah. Kohler, low water use faucets and fixtures, everything that you can do, we're doing it.
Well, that's going to be a good contest.
Yeah. It reminds me of a couple of things. First of all, I'm reminded of Jason Box when I invited him to come on this show to do an interview. And he said, if you will admit that your straw bale house is making a difference in the fight against climate change, then I'll come on the show. But otherwise, you don't seem hopeful. And the other one is from Daniel Quinn. Daniel Quinn, when he was asked, do you think that people should go out into the country and break ground on growing their own gardens and building orchards and that sort of thing? I think that's a good approach. We've interviewed Daniel Quinn on the show, author of Ishmael and other books, and his response was, haven't we broken enough ground already? And that makes me think of what Ed Begley is doing, is breaking more, breaking more, breaking more, breaking more of everything to get what he wants, including the ability to look really good with respect to the green movement, whatever that is.
Yeah, I mean, it's great for his career. I mean, because really, Ed Begley hasn't done anything since St. Elsewhere, and that was in 1988 when he went off the air, so...
We have a call. We have Tim from Colorado. Tim, what do you got for us?
Hello. Yeah, just wanted to comment real quick. Great show today. Really, really good stuff. Yeah, I think part of the problem, to be honest, is, you know, a lot of the ecotainment folks are, you know, they're a specialization of the entertainment business, and the entertainment business is about, A, making money, and, B, keeping everybody watching it. And C, keeping their heads blank while they're doing it so they keep watching, so the powers that be keep making money. And, you know, the folks inside the system, they can't see past that. And, you know, the other thought is if they really admitted how bad it is, like, what was it, a couple weeks ago, the fellow from New Zealand, I thought was just hilarious, you get that. He was great. He was brilliant. If we admit what deep shit we're standing in, and then we think about our kids, our heads explode, and then our hearts explode, and then we don't know what the hell to do.
Yeah.
And it's tough. It is extremely tough.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the call, Tim. We'll comment on it.
Yeah, that's right. It is tough. Yeah. But actually coming to grips with the fact that not only does everybody else die, but I do too. That's hard. Acknowledging that we're in a predicament, contrary to every message we ever receive from this culture telling us that we can solve every single problem.
Yeah.
Recognizing this predicament, that's hard. It's hard.
It's hard reading Corey's work, and I'm sure it's twice as hard, you know, creating that series. You want to talk about that, Corey, a little bit? I mean, is it worn on you?
Well, I think that's a good point. I mean, society is really lacking in discipline. You know, I think a lot of the things we can take right back to that one human characteristic trait, and we either build upon it or we lose it, and we've lost it. There is no discipline. You know, people, you have now NGOs pull everything they do. They pull it first to see if people like it or not. You know, they pull to see if people like that question. If they don't like it, they don't even ask it. Everything's catered to the lowest common denominator. I mean, people can't read past, you know, five or six sentences, they lose interest. So we're a society that has tossed discipline in the garbage. I mean, we don't teach it to our children. We don't practice it. You know, it's just a wasteful, consumptive society. It's just whatever I want, I want it. I mean, this whole problem is a consumption problem. I want what I want. I don't care who suffers. I don't care what it does to the earth. I don't care, right? I don't care. I don't care about birds. I don't care about worms. I don't care about ants. I don't care about anything. I'm a human. I'm fucking American or Canadian. I deserve it. I work hard. It's my right. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. And so...
If you could not sugarcoat it anymore, we'd really appreciate that.
Well, I mean, Guy, you're out on the road now, and let's talk about that a little. You're giving presentations and you're interacting with folks, and this is a different audience generally than the audience we're talking about. But what are you seeing as far as empathy and apathy? And
it's really interesting. And now that the mainstream media are writing about abrupt climate change, I get essentially no resistance anymore, unlike as little as a year ago when every time I presented, I met with a lot of pushback. And that doesn't happen anymore. So we're having these great conversations. Almost always the conversation goes to, and this is just anathema to this culture, conversation goes to, how are you going to die? How am I going to die? And people are actually talking about this in public with people they barely know.
Yeah, that's incredible.
It really is.
Yeah. I mean,
which is great, by the way, because that's one of the many conversations that's taboo in this culture. So I really appreciate it. And I don't have an answer for that. I don't even know how I'm going to die, much less how everybody else ought to die. But I think it's wonderful that people are having the conversation about death. It's as taboo as any other topic in this culture. And yet, here we go, right to it. Everybody comes to grips with the fact that they're going to die, too. And so they think about, what does that mean? And how do we act today? And I'm spending quite a bit of time with Peter Melton, as I have in the past, and with Ivy Cohn. And we're talking about things like, well, if I want to experience my last moments in this manner, to be fully awake and aware and looking around and part of the world, then maybe I want to spend not just my last minutes, but my last hours. Maybe I want to spend my last weeks. Maybe I want to spend my whole life like that.
Yeah.
That's quite an eye-opener.
How many Guy McPherson videos and Corey Morningstar pieces do you have to read to get to that point where you can have those discussions?
Yeah, that's a fine question. For some of these people, they don't have to see or read any, and artists are exceptional in this respect. I spoke at an art gallery last night, and artists are right there, you know, and it doesn't really matter whether they're 25 years old or 75 years old. They got this.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Everywhere I've been going lately, I've been, I don't know, in the past month or whatever, anywhere I've went, there's just huge, huge lots, acres and acres of trees being cut down and piled. All that's left is tree stumps and signs. Land change use, land change use, land change use. And my city just continues to expand. I mean, I talked to this, you know, to a great extent with Forrest Palmer. This will continue until, as long as the system stays intact, and I mean, what they're working on now, you know, that's what they hope to do, keep it intact, keep it expanding, keep it strong. We talked on a different show about the financialization of nature at a global scale, assigning a monetary price to every single thing in nature. And basically, you know, as long as the system stays afloat, we are going to tear down and pave over and destroy every inch of this earth. We will not stop until it's all gone. There's no stopping. It just keeps going and going and going.
Yeah, I thought it would have ended a long time ago, but it's proven to stay up and running, very functional, longer than I even anticipated. So.
Like the huge woodlots, all those animals in there are just displaced, and it's at a massive, I mean, the rate is incredible of how quickly it continues to go, right? And just no one cares. I mean, those houses, they're so ugly to begin with. They're so ugly, and they're so cheap, right? They're just built like shit, and people just line up to buy them.
Right.
And they're huge money. They're ugly. I don't get it.
It reminds me that civilization basically has two speeds. Must go faster and get no in-between.
And on that note, we're going to wrap it up. So thank you, Corey, again, and we appreciate your work and your voice, and we hope to talk to you again next month. And Guy, be safe out there on the road, and look forward to your return and hearing more about your tour. All right, that about wraps it up this week. Make sure to like our Facebook page, Nature Bats Last on the Progressive Radio Network, and join our Facebook group as well. It's Nature Bats Last on PRN.FM, and feel free to post questions you'd like us to address on the show, and please share widely the link and information from the show. Continue to follow Guy's blog at GuyMcPherson.com. For further essays, updates, and speaking tours, we'll see you next week on the radio when we'll chat with John McMurdy, Professor Emeritus of Philosophy. And if you missed the show, make sure to find us on PRN.FM, Stitcher.com, and rate us on iTunes. Thanks again for our listeners, Corey, our caller, Afrozin, for his music. Until next time, remember, the dominant culture has been very clever, but in the end, Guy,
Nature Bat Blast.
It's gonna get you. She's coming out swinging. She bats last and she's just about